Hi, everyone. Welcome to American Truth Finders. I'm Neil Douglas, and I'm your host for the show. And I always tell you, we have a great show, and tonight is no exception by any means. My guests tonight are Ilana Freeland and Billy Hayes. And our show is actually a part three show. It's our Ionized Atmosphere and Space Fence Future Part 3. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. Pay attention to this, okay? And Space Fence Future. Space Fence Future. This is very important. And I'm not even going to give phone numbers or whatever. And actually, Ilana, I would like to start with you if I could.
Yeah.
And Ilana, can you build us a picture, you know, about in Paris and the upcoming climate control and conference, excuse me. And is there any connection with Space Fence on this?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Given what's happened in Paris in the last few days, only 16 days before the Paris conference starts, it's a UN climate change conference. Many big decisions are promised there. Big decisions that weigh heavily upon the geoengineering that we've already been subjected to for two decades. We call it chemtrails and ionospheric heater technology, but it is geoengineering. And if things go forward in Paris, now that things are getting settled into a closed down police state in Paris because of this recent catastrophe, which I don't even want to go into. It's just about the same as all the others that have happened in Paris and here and different places. I foresee that one of the big decisions that's going to have to take place either in the back rooms at the Paris UN conference or out in front of the public is going to have to do with the United States and the role that it's playing, NATO's role in the geoengineering. They're going to have to take on global warming. Does it exist? Doesn't it exist? What is climate change natural or is it anthropogenic? Are humans making it happen? So all of this, one can hope, and I have my fingers crossed, will come out at the conference. I mean, I'm going to be listening because I do feel it's a big event. It's following directly on the heels of the September 25 conference on sustainable development, which is the 2030. That's just the renamed Agenda 21. The year 2030, all sorts of things are supposed to be in place. And basically what we're talking about here is we're talking about the creation of global government and the means by which it's going to be enforced. As people are going to be forced to pay carbon taxes falsely, I might add, because carbons are not the problem. No one has mentioned the military-industrial intelligence complex use of geoengineering for experimentation in the last two decades. This is key to the elite globalists setting up their kingdom. And the fact that this happened in this this mayhem happened in Paris is very interesting to me. Also going on at the same time, add this to the big picture, CERN is going to be fired up again for I think it's November 19 to December 13, exactly the time of the conference. The conference starts on the 30th of November and ends on the 11th of December. So I don't see that as accidental. I don't see the Paris so-called terrorist event as accidental. I see all of these culminating in a large event in Paris at the same time that CERN begins to, instead of, I'm looking here at my notes from Anthony Patch, who is a wonderful expert on CERN. I was listening to him this afternoon. And the idea is that though they've been colliding protons at CERN, what's going to happen is they're going to start colliding lead on November 19th through December 13th. And what this is going to do, I can only imagine, because that means much more power being sent through the 17-mile diameter tunnels. And I remember, it's not that long ago, back last spring, if everybody remembers the, I think it was a Russian Airbus that went down.
Yeah.
It was March 24th, 2015, the German Airbus, A320, and it was very, it was 127 miles south of CERN, and CERN had been fired up. So, I mean, the use of CERN in the space fence configuration, and Billy and I are going to primarily talk about the space fence today, but the use of CERN in it is pivotal, because CERN has to do with the magnetosphere, it has to do with the building and accessing of magnetic fields, and the fact that that plane dropped right out of the sky is very telling. So a lot is going on right now, and if people are feeling nervous and afraid and anticipatory, I understand that, but we are living in a transitional era. We're moving into the space age in the sense that it's going to be in everyone's minds as well. And meanwhile, everything has been covertly, very quietly set up for space fence lockdown, I call it. And that is the name of the next book I'm writing. I am the author of Chemtrails Harp and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth. And now Billy is my right-hand man as I attempt to write a book on the coming space fence. So with that said, I want to introduce Billy Hayes, the Harp Man. And Billy, let's start out by going a little bit into the history of looking at analog to digital, how that changed, what that change really meant. It didn't just mean our TVs. Some of what's happened to HARP since it used to be the number one ionospheric heater, doing all sorts of weather disasters, et cetera. What has happened to HARP in the last 3 years?
Well, that started off by taking a gander back in the 80s when our first cell phones came up. And in the maneuver of doing so in 82, 83, there was a compromise of frequencies with satellite dishes being used for police band, EMS, and commercial services. And in doing so in 85, 86, the government proposed to move all frequencies on those bands, on the 0.8 to 2.8 megahertz off band to a different area. And that was paid for by the government. Now, this wasn't just a little bit of things. This was a whole bunch. And this compromise was in order to basically set up the primary analog for the future ideal of digital systems.
Yeah.
And they did this without telling anybody. They just came in and said, you have to change this. We're paying for it, blah, blah. And they changed out all these dishes all over the United States just in a matter of weeks. I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of dishes went up all over the United States on new frequencies to allow this compromise for the cellular systems.
And wasn't that the same time that the Strategic Defense Initiative was going under the Reagan era?
Absolutely. It was all in parallel with that movement. The whole idea was to centralize that consortium of frequencies so it could be utilized in a communication network.
Yeah.
And so this has gone back a long ways.
Oh, yes. Gone back. And then in the late 80s and into the 90s, with the development of HARP in the 90s, they started taking down ground systems off from telephone poles, off from light poles, basically spreading out this grounding network that was grounding out the possible use of frequencies that would be utilized in the harping systems, which was not just a 28 and 2.8 megahertz. It was some of the lower keyed frequencies that are the pulse frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they had to go out and take off grounds off from all these poles. And in fact, they took off so many poles, grounds, that eventually they had a system that every time there was a solar event, telephone poles were catching on fire.
Oh, wow.
And we have seen this just the last year or two, Texas, when they started going through that lack of water, what do we call that?
Drought, yeah.
Drought, yeah.
As soon as the grounds started picking off one by one, since they were already spaced out beyond proper usage, as these grounds lifted further and further, it made it more resonant to the solar response that was coming in. Therefore, every time there was a peak pulse that came in with sun activity, these poles went up in fire all across Texas.
So what have they done to fix that so that that doesn't happen with solar flares?
Well, they've had to come back and put grounds on these new systems since they took down HARP, and they went to the new system of higher frequencies via space fence using the HARP technologies and new security systems with the new service packs with all the new space fence. But
so
everything
reality,
now,
more dangerous.
Absolutely. It's more dangerous in the fact that instead of using the outermost portion of our atmosphere, they are utilizing now our atmosphere that is contains chemical components, metallic components, that they can adjust and originate in certain positions, certain wavelengths, certain sizes, certain directivity, where they can utilize it and even more beneficial factors for their weapon system and communications.
Right, for the what they call C4, command, control, communications, and cyber war.
Absolutely.
So let's go back for a second, Billy, to the SDI. Now, was the space fence part of the SDI initially?
Absolutely. In fact, it's when DARPA threw out all the barrels, opened up the doors for Atlantic Richfield.
APTE up in...
ARCO, yeah.
Yeah.
The original HARP site was set up by Atlantic Richfield Company. My train of thought's not all there.
That's
but
okay.
The whole thing was that they were doing tomography systems utilizing the same ideal the HARP had. And Bernard Eastman came up with this patent that was socialized into the same form as what the tomography was being utilized for.
Uh-huh.
And when the SDI came through with the assistance of Ronald Reagan, it just opened the doors. This was the new, I'm trying to remember what we were calling it back then.
It doesn't matter, but it was a space fence, right?
Space Fence was part of it, but the SDI part of it was.
You don't mean Star Wars.
Star Wars. That's the word I was looking for.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, people. I'm having a seizure right now, so I'm having a little problem.
Well, Billy, you let me know if you need me to take over and we can move someplace else.
Go ahead and take it for a while.
Okay. Yeah. Take care of yourself. So Yes, when the Star Wars program was up and running, what was missing was this ground system that needed to be in place, and that now is in place. Another thing that was missing was the power needed to ionize the atmosphere so that it had a lot of conductive particulates in it. Really, you can't do much for C4, command, control, communications, and cyber war. You can't do much if the air is clean and pure, so it needs particulates in it. And that was really when HAARP came on board. And that would have been, Eastland's patent was in 1987. There were a series of patents, but they began work on it at that point, and they were able to use the natural gas up in Gakona that was already there, which was very nice for them. Plus, Gakona, Alaska is right up in the Arctic Circle, which also helped. So setting HAARP up, giving it a series of experiments that needed to be run, namely trying to access big-time energy from the ionosphere. And everything went well for those experiments until finally in 2012. And meanwhile, as you know, all that time they were using disinformation, subterfuge, lies, calling people like independent scientist Clifford Carnicom a conspiracy nut, tinfoil hat people. Anyone who noticed, even Nick Begich, who he and Gene Manning wrote the first book on HAARP, Angels Don't Play This HAARP, which is how I got into it at that point. All of these people were just shunted to the side and marginalized and made fun of until 2012 and 2013, when HAARP literally was shut down. And there's a YouTube on the net that you can look at where the senator from Alaska is questioning the Navy and Air Force as to are they going to continue with HAARP or what's going to happen? Are they going to take it apart? Because the experiments were over and they had gleaned a tremendous amount from it. What was not said in that interview was not only had they gleaned a lot of information and data and knowledge from those experiments, but they had actually been able to, with chemtrails, which of course they call contrails, they had been able to ionize the atmosphere and were continuing to ionize the atmosphere on a daily level, and it's still going on today. Ionizing the atmosphere, very important to creating the atmosphere as a battery. It's battery ready. It's a form of a generator, and they have to keep it. The particulates, they have to lay those particulates over and over so that they can zap them with radio frequency. And what they've done, which is quite brilliant, though, you know, I'm fighting them tooth and nail, is that they have been able to create the weather, big weather events, as a way to bolster the battery-ready nature of our ionized atmosphere. There is no... they're not giving a whole lot of thought to our health, the fact that we're breathing an electrified, ionized atmosphere, that we're breathing particulates, nanoparticulates of heavy metals, that we are breathing other experiments, that they're piggybacking onto the polymers and the little filaments that people think are spider webs that are falling from the sky. All of this looks to be collateral damage, but also they're interested in how people are going to evolve under this ionized atmosphere. And so they're no doubt hacking into hospital and clinic records in order to see what's going on there. Meanwhile, doctors don't know what to do with it. Some are complicit and know exactly what they're looking at when people with Morgellons check in and they have the lesions with little fibers sticking their heads out of these lesions. But other doctors really haven't a clue what's going on. So that's been our situation. And as I say, the Paris conference, in my opinion, is probably going to legitimize this. this two-decade experimentation that's been going on, and then we will see what happens with the geoengineering from there on up. But legitimized, I can only fear the worst. Billy, Ilana, are you back? Ilana, oh, yes.
Can I ask Ilana a quick question, Billy? This is just very quick, Ilana. Uh-huh. You know, we've talked about this on last show, but I've noticed in the last, just myself, in the last couple of weeks, because I, my own pulmonary doctor, knows about what's going on with chemtrails. And
wow, he's rare.
Yes. And let me tell you, in fact, more and more people are coming in with issues, breathing issues,
right,
than they've ever had, Now, the reason I'm bringing this up to you because I want our listeners to know how dangerous this is to everybody's health.
Yeah, I mean, when you have something invisible going on like this, I mean, you can't see the ions moving through the air. You can't see them going into the lungs. You can't see the nanoparticulates that you're breathing in that are on your skin, in your hair, everywhere. They're in placentas when babies are born. They're everywhere. And that's not counting the sensors and the microprocessors, i.e. teeny-weeny, little tiny nano computers that are also being breathed in. So our lungs are particularly vulnerable because we have never breathed an air like this. And it is unfortunately quickened and made much worse by our Wi-Fi environments, which, of course, we're told it's non-thermal, no problem, there's no evidence of health risks, whereas in Europe, everybody knows that there's health risks from non-thermal radiation. So it's being activated, it's being quickened by our Wi-Fi environments that the military is thrilled we're using because they need those cell towers. They need all the different accoutrements for all of the wireless accoutrements for the space fence, for space fence operation. So we're in a real bind, and it's very unfortunate that those who are running our government and in our medical industry are basically lying to us and not at all concerned with helping us in this dilemma that we're having. They are also looking to see if people can evolve. Who can evolve to handle this? Who can't? The ones who can't, well, it makes the medical industry and big pharma richer. The ones who can evolve, I'm sure they're following their records very well. I do pretty well in this environment because I don't eat dairy. And I don't eat sugar, and I don't eat red meat. All of these things I've decided are stressful to my system. I'm aging. I need to take care of myself. I don't want to be broken down. I haven't been to a doctor in many, many decades. So I'm doing okay because my immune system is strong. I know I have knowledge of how this works. I highly recommend to people that they begin to build a knowledge base for their own immune system and really examine their lifestyles. This is what we need now. No one is coming to save us. There will be no one that's going to take care of our problems but us. And so many people on the net are now sharing stories, sharing information. It's a very democratic movement. There are no leaders for this looking into anti-geoengineering and how it's enriching the medical industry and big pharma. This is what we need to do. And you're very fortunate to have a physician who actually says, yeah, I know there are chemtrails, because most of them are either, as I said, ignorant or complicit.
Yeah, thank you. Listen, I didn't mean to interrupt Billy's, what you were going to go on to Billy with.
That's good. That's good.
I felt that this is a very important question.
It is.
For our listeners. Thank you, Ilana. And I'll let you take over again.
Yeah. Billy, how are you feeling? Are you there?
I'm here.
Are you going to do okay? You don't have to, you know. I don't want you to stress yourself.
I'm sticking it out.
Okay. All right. So we did talk about analog to digital. Billy told me something today that I didn't know. He says that there are actually 16 supercomputer AIs that are all interlocked. And this is also another very important part of the space fence, is the supercomputers in a wireless world, of course. So how deep this goes, Billy was talking today about genealogy. And Billy, can you say a few words about that? I found that really fascinating.
Over the last two decades, every baby, the newborn that was born in the United States and all NATO nations, blood was taken and DNA samples were made out of all those babies. That's for the last two decades. Just during the last 2 years, genealogy has taken a, what you might say, a compromised commercial pursuit of identifying DNA families in association with all the data that was collected on newborn babies over the last two decades. Now they're coming in and filling in the spaces beyond that, setting up a roadmap of all DNA families, more or less, how you call it, a tree.
Like a family tree? Mm-hmm.
Family tree, right. And there's been commercial advertisements on TV for free genealogy tests. Just send in your name for a kit and they'll send you a kit. And it's been like genealogy.com, U.S. Gen Web Project, theheritage.com, Genealogy Bank, thefamilytree.com, ancestry.com. All these people are on the government auspice of collecting information on families and collecting that DNA to process worldwide trees, connecting everything back to the days of Jesus, back to the days of the Pharaohs.
What's their point, Billy? Well, I mean, what is the reason behind all of this? What's their goal?
To be able to identify in the future the family trees in the future.
Right, and how does it play into the space fence in the digital world?
Well, in the digital world, every DNA is a digital ID. And therefore, every person on this earth can be ID'd and tracked.
Yep.
Just through their blood.
That's the goal.
Right. Being able to, this is where Junior is, this is where Billy is, this is where Ilana is. And look, they're moving.
Yeah. And this goes back to when Edward Snowden revealed that everyone is being surveilled and the extent of the surveillance. What I think he didn't say, and I'm assuming he knows, but perhaps he will reveal it, or perhaps that's part of what he cannot reveal, is that this ability to surveil is not just down to a postage stamp from a satellite camera. This is down to the DNA level. And that's a big part of the space fence surveillance that we're going to be subjected to when it's finished. Right, Billy?
Right. A matter of all persons' ID will be not only their DNA as it is, but a copy of their DNA on all identification matters, whether it be your credit card, your Social Security, your electric bill, everything will have this DNA ID on it. Therefore,
that's
they
scary. That is right. Scary as hell.
So they'll be able to track you anywhere. If you go in to Walmart's, they know you're in Walmart's. You don't have to show them your ID. These things are where they can read you as you pass the big yellow post in Walmart's or Walgreens. You know those looks like concrete posts out there in front?
Oh, sure.
Well, guess
sure.
What? Those are antennas. And anybody who walks, right, and this ideal that having a Faraday cage over your wallet? That's a laugh.
Yeah, really. Yeah. And so this is the space fence. And what we need to do, Billy, is build more of a picture. Now we've gone down to the very DNA level, not just for identification either. It could be to change the DNA of a family line. It could be to identify and track a particular DNA line. So this is all space fence stuff. Now let's start in the air, Billy. We were talking about the rockets. Let's go there.
Okay. Well, let's back up and look at California this last week.
Yeah.
You know, there was two missile shots that went off.
What? Those were Nikes? Were they Nikes?
No, they were Trident. Trident D5s.
That's right. I get them confused.
No, they were Trident 3 D5s,
okay,
which are submerged launches off of a submersible. And when these things launch for the first quarter mile, it's nothing but a steam bath, a plume of steam. Once they get a little more than a quarter mile above the water, then you can, they are a normal rocket, a solid fuel rocket. These things burn a nanothermite propellant. And nanothermite is a mixture of an explosive component mixed with nanobits of aluminum oxide. And the ideal is this will burn without air.
And I guess is this becoming a worldwide issue?
This is a worldwide issue. This thing went up, and not only did it burn.
Before this calling period, press star.
Sorry, guys.
Not only did it do a solid fuel burn, but its payload was a nanothermite, aluminum, lithium, barium burn. When this hit the upper atmosphere and started to burn, it gave this blue glow because as these particles hit that upper atmosphere at such a velocity, it creates a plasma effect. And right there is the first dietary component of this HARP technology.
What do you mean dietary, Billy?
It is part of the ingredients to make it work. It has to have this diet of components in order for that to work. Well, there you got lithium for assistance in creating a power source.
Mm-hmm.
As it moves through the air, it creates a what they call lens effect by passing through magnetic fields. A metal, anytime you pass metal through a magnetic field.
Yeah.
A non-magnetic metal. It creates a flux field. And this flux field creates an electrical field. And this is what creates the charging effect around that bias of that cloud. And that's what people were seeing, was this iridescent glow.
Right. It looked kind of like an egg with a tail on it.
Right, you have to look at it. This is a mini explosion going on. In a sense, it's a fire, and it blooms out, and then it comes back in and follows the component of the trail behind it. And this missile is turning slowly, and it creates a slight spiral, and you can see that spiral behind it. This was nothing like Norway. This was a missile launch. Norway was an electronic hologram.
Yeah.
This was a missile launch. Its intention was to track the new system of the space fence, to utilize new tomography realms that the Navy is wanting to use, of number one, being able to locate mines in the water, other submarines in the water. Let's see. I got the mines, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and underground tunnels and underground bases and I mean, all sorts of things for tomography, resources.
Anything that was out of the ordinary that was in the underground water.
Yeah.
Plus, they were trying out a new system, which we've discussed this before, Champus, whereby they fire a small missile, which is not even recognizable. It's a very stealth system of releasing a EMP flash. And you can see this EMP flash in that flight. It looks like a quick chain, a small ring, almost like a separation of stages, but the Trident is a single-stage rocket. And it makes this change of the area around it. You can see a discoloration as it happens for a split second, and it's all seen. You can see it in all every video you look at.
And so for this rocket, besides testing the AI and all the different tomography, et cetera, as it goes up into the upper atmosphere, is it laying the heavy metals in that ring around the planet that you and I have talked about?
Yes. It's all part of it. Every one of these sounding rockets that go up, that take into the upper atmosphere and preferably above. Now, this missile did not go into orbit. It only maintained up to 9,500 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So its temp was not to put it in orbit. Once these missiles acquire above 9,500 miles per hour, then they're susceptible to being put in orbit.
And so why are they laying those metals above? Is it one of the objectives?
I was just going to ask that, Ilana. Thank you.
Okay, the idea behind this is to create a Saturn ring effect eventually. Once you spread this into outer space, all around the world, as the world spins, it creates a centrifugal force, and you know what happens to all this matter that's up there. If it's orbiting at that speed and it has the capability of moving on its own, it's going to go to the highest point of anti-gravity force around the equator.
So this is like is this the space fence that you're talking about?
This will be part of the new space fence. Yes, it will. This was up for a discussion way back in 2007, just before Bernard Eastman and passed away. He died in December, and on May 7th, 2007, there was a conversation between Tom Beardman, Fred Bell, Bernard Eastman, myself, and I can't remember who the fifth person was, but the discussion was on this exact thing, and I'm trying to remember who said it.
Who said what, Billy?
I wrote it down somewhere.
Because I do want to, when you find this, Billy, I do want to go back to Ilana at our beginning and ask her a question regarding the space fence that will tie into what you're talking about. But I've got mine is a little bit more deeper and maybe even extreme. I don't know the question that I have for Ilana on this.
Uh-huh. Billy, did you find it?
No, I can't find it. I wrote it down. I can't even read it.
Okay, but one of the things I think of when I think of the rim, in a way, one of the rings, like the rings of Saturn, is being built, constructed around the equator of the Earth, is that this to have this there for the space fence, this dense ring of conductive metals, this can be used for building tremendous electromagnetic domes around areas. Can you explain that, Billy? You know, like the dome that you saw up in Alaska over Harp.
What this is and these walls that go up with this new chemical assisted atmosphere, it creates a bow into it, similar to that of the ionosphere, but the ionosphere was only able to bow upwards and make a bubble. These new atmospheric conditions that are in the lower atmosphere blow out as a total balloon around an area, making an envelope. And everything within that envelope that's within, you might call it a super dish, like a satellite dish, everything that sits in that bubble is being forcibly, all signals going out would now be reflected right back in. Or the majority.
Is it like no escape? Is it like no escape thing?
That's it. This promotes this bubble to eventually ionize to the point that it becomes a protectorate, a guardian of our atmosphere.
It's kind of like the Cirrus cloud cover is also insulative. And this one that we're talking about, the dome, I can't help but feel it's something like the, there's a show on the television now. I don't have the channel, but it's called Under the Dome. And these people are of the future, supposedly, are subject to a big invisible dome around them that is electromagnetic, and they can't get out. And they can't penetrate it, though sometimes the dome is thinner. And I do have that imagination for how I see we're going to be with the space fence. It's a shield. It can be used as a shield, a very sensitive shield, to know when incoming missiles or pulses, anything coming from enemies, perhaps asteroids, etc., but it's also enclosing us. And it's that part of it that it concerns me, because living in an electromagnetic ionized atmosphere, we are very vulnerable to not only the eyes in the sky and the surveillance that we're under, but the ability to penetrate us and make use of the sensors and the microprocessors that are floating around in our bloodstream and in our genetics.
And understand, these little particulates have a resonant frequency that they are assigned to.
Mm-hmm.
Everything on this earth has a frequency assigned to. But these particulates start vibrating at that, when that frequency comes through them, they start vibrating.
Yep.
And they act like little drills.
Yes.
They can go through diamonds. I mean, you it's a law of physics. If you push on something long enough, no matter how hard it is, you eventually will go through that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, in a sense, it's kind of like a frequency of, when somebody takes a hearing test, just to give that example, a frequency sound that somewhere along the line you're going to either hear something or, you know, am I right or wrong on that issue?
Well, that's a frequency. Yeah.
That's a frequency.
Yeah, okay. So with that, and Ilana, Billy, I want to continue with you, but Ilana, I do have to ask you this question, because I'm tying this in with the space fence future.
Uh-huh.
Or the space fence itself. Going back to our beginning of our discussion tonight,
mm-hmm.
when I about the attack on Paris and the upcoming climate conference, I'm going to ask you a question, and this is going to sound maybe off the wall and crazy to you folks and to you both of you and my listening audience, but is there any possibility, because of the magnetic abilities of even mind control, that these ISIS people, these ISIS attacks, are being controlled because of something such as this, as HAARP and the space fence?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
When you watch some of these incidents on some of these demonstrations, you will see these little dishes put up. I think they're called LIDAR.
LIDAR, yeah.
Yeah. And it is utilizing frequencies to distress people. And other frequencies can be turned up where it creates a painful burn on them or irritating noise to their ears and their brain. But these things can be turned up so high that they can burn you, period.
Right.
And they can do, they can enlist rationality in your moods. Absolutely. Cell phones do this to you. I mean, if you take a kid who has an old cell phone and watch him, there was the first cell phones came out and, you know, it was a matter of communication. Everybody wanted one, blah, blah, blah. But as they went through G2, G3, G4, at each level, there was a change in personalities of people using those phones.
Right.
And there's a reason for that. These people become so induced to these phones that it is like a drug addiction. They have to have it. They can't live without it. They can't walk without it. They can't drive without it. These people are walking into telephone poles, falling in ponds, walking into buses, sides of buses, with a cell phone up to their face. These things are in command of their brains.
That's like taking a prescription drug, for crying out loud.
It's worse than that.
It's like a drug.
Go
ahead, Billy.
Try to talk to a teenager when he's got a phone in his hand.
But if you're talking about ISIS, some of the soldiers who are trained by the CIA to be in ISIS, yes, that training, it's like special forces. It includes programming now. It includes remote frequencies that are pulsed into the brain, into the various parts of the brain. That pulse can go straight to their cell phone. And not be something that goes to the cell phones of the others. I mean, this is a very finely tuned science, this remote mind control.
You have to understand, this is not an audible link. These are very unique, short pulses of a frequency at a very specific rate.
This is so dangerous sounding that it's almost like it's undefeatable.
We're there. Well, and here's the other thing. In these war areas where they've been hit, one of the areas that always gets hit is, of course, the cell towers. And in doing so, they come back in and put up new cell systems that are lower to the ground. You understand? Lower to the ground. Given a visual perspective straight in to people instead of being above them or at their phones.
Right.
These replacement towers, these replacement sites are low profile on the ground into the people type thing.
And disguised.
It just gives them better control of those situations.
In fact, these towers, I maintain that the cell phone was finally given to citizens after the military had them for at least a generation because they were ready to put up the cell towers and build the earthbound part of the space fence, and that's the only reason that we were given those cell. I mean, I think of those kids who are listening to those cell phones all the time. They are hearing tones that you and I would not hear, and those tones are conditioning them. So, you know, your question, Neil, about, you know, this sounds dangerous. Well, yeah, it's dangerous. But what can we do? Well, one thing is, why have a cell phone? As far as I'm concerned, I don't have one. I don't feel that anybody needs to be in touch with me 24/7. And I also don't trust all the tones. I mean, I don't trust the tones on the computer, on the phone. I mean, this is the age we're living in, and we need to get smart about it. We need to educate ourselves about what this means to live with all these non-thermal technologies that they say are not bad for us. They are vehicles and vessels of a certain form of control. Yes.
This honestly, and I don't mean to keep interrupting you guys, because you guys are should have your own show. I'm telling you, real fast.
No,
you really. Yeah, well, I'm serious, Elon. But, the thing I'm concerned about is because this is actually affecting the whole entire world.
Yes.
I mean, when I heard today on TV that even Africa, you know, a nation that is a, you know, a very, you know, like a poor nation. I mean, except for some parts of it are doing okay. But think about it. When they're into Africa now with this ISIS and this possible, you know, with a cell phone and the mind control thing, my God, when are they going to hit, you know, the North Pole or Iceland or some other place that there where nobody even lives? I mean, that's why I'm asking, you know, where do we go with this thing?
Well, knowledge is first. And that's my job. I know that other people are they're looking at a variety of ways to survive in this era because it's only beginning. This is just the beginning. And we need to understand, especially those of us who are older, we need to understand that the era that we grew up in is over. It's over. And now we're in another era. And we need to learn the tools to help prepare the young for the world that is here, because it has crept up on us with stealth. It has been, crucially important to the powers that be that this can be done silently and very stealthily. So that's what I represent is knowledge. Knowledge makes its power. Scientia est potentia. And it is true. I've never been stronger now that I know what I know. And every day is more. I need to learn more knowledge. I was going to just put in a couple words on CERN. How much time do we have, Neil?
Actually, we've got less than 3 minutes. I was just...
Okay. I just want to say something about, I get a lot of questions from people, what role does CERN play? What role does CERN play? And Billy, you're welcome to chime in on this. Very briefly, it's we've got to understand that CERN is tremendously powerful for on our magnetosphere. And our magnetosphere and ionosphere have already been challenged by all the HARP experiments that have gone on, rebuilding those is not an option at this point. So the CERN experiments have many, many aspects to them that have to do with gravity, have to do with magnetism, and have to do with anti-gravity. And antimatter, and these are things that we can learn about. As I told you, I've been very impressed with Anthony Patch. He has several videos up and running on, and he's discussing them. He is a Christian. He looks at it from a spiritual point of view, but he also has his science well intact. And so you can learn that. The mythology that CERN is steeped in outside CERN headquarters, I think I asked you to put it up on your site.
Yes, I'm going to do that.
You'll see one of the goddesses, the god Shiva, the
right.
god of Hinduism. And then recently in New York City in the Empire State Building, a tremendous light show, a holographic light show of Kali, the goddess of destruction, again, a Hindu goddess, was given of full glory there on one of our New York City's most important sites. So something's going on mythically in all of this, the space fence, CERN. We can't just be conditioned to not use our imagination as we begin to see what our condition in this is and what our response is going to be. That's the main thing I want to say.
Thank you so much. And Billy and Ilana, I don't mean to cut you off, but we're down to less than a minute. In fact, I want to thank both of you. I know, it goes so fast. I'm going to tell you right now, the podcast will be on American Truth Finders and also bbsradio.com. In probably by Tuesday, Ilana, your upcoming book, I definitely want to quickly have you tell us what the title is real quick.
I don't know. It's on the Space Fence.
Okay, it's on the Space Fence. All right. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, you'll find Ilana on Facebook. Billy's on Facebook. The American Truth Finders, I want to thank our engineer, Don, and both of you have been wonderful. Thank you so much for being on my show tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, 2 weeks from tonight, it'll either be live or something, because it's right after Thanksgiving. In the meantime, have a great 2 weeks. Good night, everybody. This is Neil Douglas. This is American Truth Finders. Have a great 2 weeks.